Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with this evening's broadcast of the Hola Hoax. Did you know there were no gas chambers in Germany? That Hitler had no intention of killing the Jews? He just wanted to get them out of Germany and was even trying to find a location for them to have their long-yearned-for homeland state, first in Madagascar and then to the southeast of Russia. But no, international Zionists had a desire to have Palestine. Never mind that it was already peopled with Arabs. They were all prepared to drive the Arabs off and steal the land for themselves. And they weren't about to let Hitler give them anything but Palestine. And of course, since there was no extermination program, 6 million people did not die. The Jews made that number out just out of their imagination. I think it might have something to do with their numerology or something. And the fact is, the only people that died in the concentration camps died of typhoid fever and starvation, like happens in every concentration camp. But anyway, tonight we're going to try to find out, where does the evil, demonic mind that comes up with these hideous stories, how does it develop? What has it produced? How did these evil imagining Jews get to live with white people, and how can white people get them out? So we're going to have a discussion on the history of witchcraft, which is the history of Jews' influence on Christians, and then we're going to discuss how these evil people have created a shadow government in the United States and have perpetrated and covered up the assassination of JFK, the unprovoked attack on David Koresh and his Davidians in Waco, Texas, and, of course, the attack on 9/11 against our Twin Towers, our White House, and our Pentagon. Stay tuned, and I hope you enjoy tonight's edition of The Hola Hoax. You didn't believe that the Catholic Church had been taken over by Jews, did you? And that Jews had something to do with the tortures inflicted on white people by white people in the name of Jesus Christ. Well, guess what? I have found a website called www.matcha.freeonline.co.uk that says that famous witchcraft inquisition book, the Malleus Maleficorum, was presided over by two German Dominicans named none other than Jacob Sprenger and Heinrich Kramer. What kind of name do you think Jacob is, as in Jacob Sprenger? And what kind of name do you think Kramer is, as in Heinrich Kramer? Do you think they could be Jews? Well, at any point, these were inquisitors. Back in 1484, under Pope Innocent VIII, who was well known for giving his illegitimate children splendid Vatican weddings, and had come to so fear the influence of witches over his sexual progress that he appointed as inquisitors into witchcraft these two German Jews, German Dominicans Jacob Sprenger and Heinrich Kramer. So there you have it, folks. Two Jews being appointed by the Pope to be the inquisitors over white ladies who were, of course, accused of witchcraft. Because for some odd reason, this evil, wicked Pope Innocent VIII wasn't comfortable in the presence of good, decent white women. And so he used Jews to oppress us. You see, in those days, they promoted the false belief that Eve and Adam had sinned by having sex with each other, when nothing could be further from the truth. The truth is that Eve had sex with a black man, a serpent, a necromancer, which is the word nasech means, which is the original Hebrew word that's found in the original story of Adam and Eve. In the original story of Adam and Eve, Eve had sex with Natchez. And anyway, you'll find this out in your studies. This word Natchez means necromancer, or serpent? Or witch doctor, which of course would be a black person, because black people are the ones who practice witchcraft. So apparently, some Jewish girl had sex with some black guy and produced a mongrel child who killed her good white son, and it went down in history as Adam and Eve, and it's a good thing it did, because it taught people from all religions and races all over the world that the original sin is race mixing. Not sex, but sex with the wrong person. Sex with a non-white. Well, to be strict about it, sex with anyone other than your husband. So these two monster Jews, Jacob Sprenger and Heinrich Kramer, who were appointed by this evil Pope Innocent VIII to preside over the Inquisition of Good White Women, wrote a book called Malleus Maleficorum, which meant the Hammer of Evildoers, or the Hammer of the Witches. And in this book, there are all kinds of instructions that were carried out by little prefects and pastors throughout the world, where they would take a good lady into a secret place and look at her body for moles or other things they called witch marks, and if they found them, they burned them to death. Thank you, Jacob Sprenger and Heinrich Kramer. And thank you, Pope Innocent VIII. This book was so popular that it went through 19 editions and was a principal text for the Inquisition. And what was a witch? Do you know how they defined a witch? A witch was a woman who used magic to give involuntary erections to men. And their conception was that if a man had an involuntary erection, this woman must be in league with the devil to have so much control over his private parts. In other words, all women that were lively and sexy were deemed to be witches, because of course these were the women that excited men. The sin the women were being burned to death for was called charming men, and inclining the minds of men to inordinate passion. Since when did the mind of a man have to be inclined through an act of will on the part of a woman to inordinate passion? It seems to me women are trying to get men to stop being inclined to inordinate passion. Rape was not considered a crime because the woman was blamed for having enchanted the man. We really need to study this Malleus Maleficorum written by these two demonic Jews, Jacob Sprenger and Heinrich Kramer, to figure out more about our history. So if anybody sees it on the eBay, I suggest you buy it if it doesn't cost too much. Well, I just wanted to let you know that you haven't been lied to by your teachers of white rights when they tell you that the Catholic Church was indeed heavily influenced by Jews when it comes to the tortures visited upon white people during the Inquisition. I've just proven to you that that's true. I uncovered two important German Dominicans, Jacob Sprenger and Heinrich Kramer, clearly Jewish names, who were appointed by Pope Innocent VIII in 1484 to be the inquisitors into witchcraft. And these were the authors of that famous book used to persecute and torture and burn women called Malleus Maleficorum. That was all done by Jews. Now here's a newspaper article written Saturday, June 10th, 1691, in the Athenian Mercury, which is a newspaper. This newspaper talks about the Inquisition and the examining of witches in a journalistic tone that is concerned very much like the journalistic tone that we hear today, somewhat subdued, not too rambunctious, lest they be politically incorrect, but just somewhat concerned about the mass murder that we just witnessed in Iraq. It's somewhat condemning the practice of torturing witches, but not going too far. This is an advertisement for an article that will appear in next week's newspaper, and it's entitled Advertisements. Quote, next Thursday will be published the new piece mentioned in the last Mercury, entitled A Further Account of the Trials of the New England Witches, with the observations of a person that was upon the place 6 or 7 days when the suspected witches were first taken into examination. To which is added cases of conscience concerning witchcraft and evil spirits personating men. Written at the request of the ministers of New England by Increase Mather, president of Harvard College, printed for John Dutton at the Raven in the Poultry, of whom may be had the third edition of Mr. Cotton Mather's first account of the trials of the New England witches, printed on the same size with this last account, that they might bind up together. So you see, even then we had our Harvard Dershowitz professors, only in those days he was called Cotton Mather, who very intellectually wrote dissertations on how witches were being tortured. And whenever he put out a book, the journalistic community got excited enough to advertise it in a newspaper with a little tone that maybe it wasn't the best thing to be doing to these women. Not that that is overtly stated, but just the fact that the journalist presents it to the public and lets them know this is going on is all the journalists could do then, just as it's all the journalists can do now, to try to raise public opinion to the level of putting a stop to this hideous barbarism. And then, of course, it does sell newspapers. Now, of course, you know who good old Professor Dershowitz is from Harvard, don't you? He's the professor, the Jewish professor, who espouses the use of torture as a good thing, in direct contradiction to what our founding fathers taught us, which is that the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution stands for there being no torture in the United States of America, a unique and important step in evolution. But Jewish Professor Dershowitz, from Harvard no less, has decided to take out the Sixth Amendment and bring torture back to our soil so that he can be comfortable here, because God knows Jews love torture. All you have to do is go to 2 Samuel, read it through, and you will see that any time their king got mad, he just went down to the city of Ammonites and had them walk through hot ovens until they were dead. And he did that for fun, and he did that for whole cities of them. This is what Jews do, not what Germans do. The idea of them being put into ovens in Germany is a lie. They are the guys who like to burn people up. And so, of course, their great spiritual father, Professor Dershowitz, is just chomping at the bit to bring torture to the United States of America. Him and his little Harvard professor cohort, Noel Ignatieff, who is calling for the abolishment of the white race, which he says is so desirable that, quote, some may find it hard to believe, unquote, that anyone other than, quote, committed white supremacists, unquote, would oppose it.
What a pair! Professor Dershowitz had his spiritual soulmate in 1675 or so in the form of Reverend Cotton Mather, one of Puritan New England's leading thinkers and ministers, and the man to whom I just referred, who wrote the first accounts of the trials of the New England witches, and a further account of the trials of the New England witches. Cotton Mather had a very important father named Increase Mather, who was the president of Harvard College. He had a protege named Reverend Barnard, after whom, I suspect, was named Barnard College. Barnard College was founded by Jewish hero Annie Nathan Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R. So there's the Jewish influence again, between persecution of white people through the use of torture under the influence of Jews in the 1600s and Jewish professor at Harvard in 2003 instituting torture in America. So now we have the president of Harvard University, Increase Mather, encouraging or assisting his son Cotton Mather in writing the first and further account of the trials of the New England witches. And we find them running around with a guy named Barnard, who was so loved by the founder of Barnard College, a Jewess, that she names the college after him. I would say this lady, named Annie Meyer, has some influence in the situation. So these guys are writing about the examinations of witches, and guess what book is being used to examine these witches? The Malleus Maleficarum, which is written by two Jews 200 years ago. So let's see what these Mather boys do under the influence of Jewess Annie Meyer when they get their hands on the book Malleus Maleficarum. Cotton Mather, one of New England's eminent thinkers, was a strong proponent of the Jewish lie perpetrated on the white race known as hell. In a preface to one of his children's books, Cotton Mather warned young readers, quote, "They which lie must go to their father the devil into everlasting burning. They which never pray, God will pour out his wrath upon them, and when they bed and pray in hellfire, God will not forgive them, but there they must lie forever. Are you willing to go to hell and burn with the devil and his angels?" Unquote. If this man was not a Jew, he was definitely under the influence of Jews. For it is Jews who invented the concept of hell and convinced white people that it was true, in a horrible form of mind control, designed to separate white men from their natural relationship with a loving God, as Jesus taught. Although Mather was not directly involved in the examinations of witches using the book Malleus Maleficarum, he did act as counsel to the judges when he was so moved. And he did recommend the detection of witchcrafts, giving the courts his seal of approval that the trial should go on. Although there is some evidence that Cotton Mather thought these witches should be executed without trials because they were such obvious cases of being impudent, scurrilous, wicked creatures. So now let's go on to a study of the Malleus Maleficarum and see how it was used, this book written by Jews to torture white people. The Malleus Maleficarum, written in 1486 by Heinrich Kramer with a K, K-R-A-M-E-R, and James Springer. They've changed the Jakoff to James here. Oh, boy. Served as a guidebook for inquisitors. Designed to aid in the identification, prosecution, and execution of witches. Yeah, did you notice that Jakoff changed his name to James so that you would not know he was a Jew? Good thing we have the internet. Firstly, the Malleus Maleficarum says that if you do not believe in witches, you are guilty of heresy and can be executed as a witch, or at least a heretic. So, just to start you off, you're not allowed to say there's no such thing as a witch. Sort of like today, when you're not allowed to say that Jews are bad or that there were no such thing as gas chambers. 600,000 to 9 million people were burned or executed as witches during the 250-year-long course of the Inquisition, which was centered primarily in Rome, Spain, and Portugal. Mostly the accused were women, primarily old women, midwives, Jews, poets, and gypsies. Heretics were also executed. Scientists were branded as heretics and were executed. Most notably, Galileo. The Malleus Maleficarum is one of the most blood-soaked works in human history, being the handbook for the inquisitors. At the height of its popularity, the Malleus Maleficarum was the most widely read book of all, except for the Bible. And even today, the Bible is the most widely read book. So that's very popular, that the Malleus Maleficarum was the second most popular book. So we're going to search the Malleus Maleficarum. Let's look for blood. One of the instructions is to have the inquisitor summon the friends of the accused and have the friends tell the accused that she may escape the death penalty, although she will be punished in another way if she confesses the truth, and urges them, the friends, to try to persuade her, the accused, to confess. For very often meditation and the misery of imprisonment and the repeated advice of honest men dispose the accused to discover the truth. Well, I think we're still using some of these principles. Don't you, ladies and gentlemen? Let's see what else our trusted leaders have learned from the Malleus Maleficarum. Maybe by peeking into this book, we can get a glimpse of the mind of Professor Dershowitz and see how he puts it together that we're supposed to bring torture to the shores of the United States of America. Well, very clearly, anger was considered a terrible sin in those days, as they are trying to make it today with the new hate speech laws that will make it illegal to express anger at any member of a minority group. Of course, you could express all the anger you want to at the white people, because God knows they are supposed to be made extinct, according to Ignatieff of Harvard, who says nobody will miss them except the most extreme white supremacists. So we're going to abolish the white race. That's just for starters. Therefore, the white race, you can do any amount of abuse you want to, but as to the other races, white people are not allowed to express any anger. And that, of course, is thought control and mind control, and entirely un-American and against the principles of the Founding Fathers, who wanted Americans to be fully human, complete with hearts and minds and mouths, to express what goes on in the heart and mind. But don't try to explain that to the Jews. And don't try to explain that to Dershowitz, because he agrees with these people writing the Malleus Maleficarum that you're not supposed to feel anger, because if you do, and if you express anger, and if anything happens to the person you expressed the anger toward, you are going to be held liable. And here's where it explains it. The first thing you say to the person you're interrogating, if you're the judge, is, "We, the judge of such and such a diocese, etc., find that you are equivocal in your admissions, as, for example, when you say that you used such threats with no intention of doing an injury, but nevertheless there are various proofs which are sufficient warrant for exposing you to the question and torture." So the mere fact of a woman getting mad at someone, or a Jew getting mad at someone, or any disenfranchised person getting mad, was enough to get them tortured. Just like they're trying to do to us today with their hate speech laws. Only this time it's the white man that's going to be tortured, except this time we're putting a stop to it. The Jews invent it, the white man destroys it, if it's this kind of thing. Now, apparently, sometimes the torture victims got driven to their limits and they would spit on the ground and then confess, because they knew that they had to confess, even if it wasn't true. But this was interpreted as the accused spitting in the devil's face, as if to say, "Depart, cursed devil, I shall do what is just." So they absolutely and probably intentionally misread the body language and expressions of the accused who was being interrogated, because they are devils. That's why. I mean, anybody who writes something like Malleus Maleficarum, Malleus Maleficarum, is a devil, if there is such a thing as a devil. So these little, we are going to see some very bad stuff now. For example, absolute, clear misreading of the conduct of the accused, who is spitting actually in the face of the inquisitor, but they say she's spitting in the face of the devil, and is now going to tell us the truth instead of, and is now going to lie through her teeth in order to save her life, because we're forcing her to do it. So first you strip the accused. She is stripped by a woman of good reputation. And any instruments of witchcraft found in the clothing is removed. God knows what they're talking about. And if she refuses to confess, they tie her up, quote, "and apply to her some engine of torture, and then let them obey at once, but not joyfully, rather appearing to be disturbed by their duty," unquote. Is this not instructions from a devil to a devil? They even tell you how to pretend not to enjoy it. I've been tortured by people like that, haven't you? You know, some guy's doing something mean to you, or some lady's doing something mean to you, and she's acting like, "Oh, I just hate having to do this to you." Oh, yeah, right. Like you can tell it's the biggest victory in their life. And so after they have tortured you, if she still doesn't confess, remind her that she will escape the death penalty if she confesses. Now, you know, they used all of these tortures at Nuremberg. I just feel like I'm reading the description of what they did at Nuremberg to the prisoners that confessed of the gas chambers and the steam chambers and the electrical chambers and all of the other stuff that didn't exist. But they cautioned the judge not to, or the torturer, not to offer to let her escape the death penalty if there's enough evidence to convict her without her confession, that evidence being her, quote, general bad reputation and witnesses. But some people think that even if she has a notoriously bad reputation, if she's willing to confess under torture, she should maybe get the death penalty. Imprisonment, quote, for life on bread and water, provided that she supply evidence which will lead to the conviction of other witches, unquote. But she's not to be told that it's going to be imprisonment with bread and water. She should, quote, be led to suppose that some other penance, such as exile, will be imposed on her as punishment, unquote. In other words, if you'll give us evidence on your friends, we'll send you to a beautiful island, but the truth is we're going to put you in solitary confinement on bread and water for the rest of your life. That's the kind of people we are. Now, using witches' medicine and curing people by the use of medicine was witchcraft. So any woman who had knowledge of nutrition and vitamins, who put, you know, like we do today, offering people vitamin C drinks, would definitely be cause of being convicted in witchcraft. And then there are some who theorize that if you promise to spare her life, it's okay to spare her life for a while, and then you can burn her later. Quote, but after a certain period, she should be burned, unquote. They say that it's okay for one judge to promise the accused her life and then let another judge take it from her. I mean, they just did everything as tricky as they possibly could. And I bet a lot of our judiciary is still doing some of this stuff. So then, if they can't get her to confess, then they use torture lightly or heavily, quote, according as the nature of her crimes demands, unquote. Quote, and while she is being questioned about each several point, let her be often and frequently exposed to torture, beginning with the more gentle of them, for the judge should not be too hasty to proceed to the graver kind. And while this is being done, let the notary write all down how she is tortured and what questions are asked and how she answers, unquote. I mean, don't you just get the picture of the poor person being tortured throughout history, and there is always a little note taker? Isn't that just cute? Of course, you know, everything that's said under torture is useless and stupid anyway, because people will say anything under torture, but yet we must have the torture, and we must have the little note taker. That's the kind of people we are in the judiciary. And of course, after she confesses under torture, you take her another place and have her repeat the confession so that you won't have a confession achieved under torture. See how fair we are? But of course, if she doesn't repeat the confession that she just said under torture, you take her back and torture her some more, and you keep doing this until she finally gets it in her little pea brain that you want her to say something, and you're not going to quit torturing her until she says what you want. Now, who's the witch here? The good guys or the bad guys? I'd say it's the Jews. The guys who invented this fucking book, and the guys who have infiltrated our judiciary and still practicing these crappy deals. And And she always has to have guards around her to prevent her from killing herself. Isn't that sweet? That's under Malleus Maleficarum, Part 3, Second Head, Question 14, of the method of sentencing the accused to be questioned, and how she must be questioned on the first day, and whether she may be promised her life, the ninth action. And I frankly had enough of this book.
Now, I know you don't believe that I'm telling you the truth when I say that Alan Dershowitz, a professor at Harvard University, condones the use of torture. I know that you think I'm a liar. I would have to be a liar.
So I did a search on Dershowitz, just the name Dershowitz, and I got a thousand names, and I couldn't find Alan Dershowitz anywhere. So then I added the word torture to it, and up pops Alan Dershowitz saying, torture could be justified. And remember, this is a Jew here, so you watch the Jewishness come out. He's being interviewed by Wolf Blitzer, also a Jew, and a neocon, and dedicated to destroying the world and turning it over to the communists and destroying the white race. So Dershowitz is not a very swift fellow himself. But anyway, he's interviewing two men here, one Alan Dershowitz, the Jew, and Ken Roth, who knows? He seems white, but I'm getting so nervous and suspicious that I'm wondering if there's any white people in positions of trust. Anyway, Blitzer says, Alan Dershowitz, a lot of our viewers will be surprised to hear that you think there are right times for torture. Is this one of those moments? Dershowitz, I don't think so. And then he goes on to say why it's not time yet to apply torture to this alleged terrorist. Dershowitz says, my basic point, though, is we should never, under any circumstances, allow low-level people to administer torture. If torture is going to be administered as a last resort, in the ticking bomb case, to save enormous numbers of lives, it ought to be done openly, with accountability, with approval by the President of the United States, or by a Supreme Court justice. Well, isn't that nice? So what does that mean? That means nothing. Then he says, I don't think we're in that situation in this case. And then Blitzer says, well, how do you know? And Dershowitz says, so we might be close. So he is considering torturing this alleged terrorist. And then Blitzer says, Alan, how do you know that he doesn't have that kind of time-ticking information right now, that there's some plot against New York or Washington that he is involved with, and there's a time sensitivity? If you knew that, if you suspected that, you would say to get the presidents to authorize torture. And so, you know, here's Blitzer the Jew egging on Dershowitz the Jew. And then Jew starts backing off. Well, we don't know, and that's why we could use torture. We could get a torture warrant, which puts a heavy burden on the government to demonstrate by factual evidence the necessity to admit the horrible, horrible technique of torture. I would talk about non-lethal torture, say a sterilized needle underneath the nail, which would violate the Geneva Accords. But you know, countries all over the world violate the Geneva Accords. They do it secretly and hypothetically, the way the French did it in Algeria. If we ever came close to doing it, and we don't know whether this is such a case, I think we would want to do it with accountability and openly, and not adopt the way of the hypocrite. I mean, we are such nice people. Okay, Blitzer. And then he turns to the other guy. All right, Ken, under those kinds of rare extreme circumstances, does Professor Dershowitz make a good point? Ken the what? Oh, his name is Roth, so he's probably a Jew, too. He says, he doesn't. The prohibition on torture is one of the basic absolute prohibitions that exists in international law. You notice even Roth, the Jew, doesn't bring up the point that we have a Sixth Amendment that protects all of our people from cruel and inhuman punishment, directly addressing the question of torture, for which the United States of America gets credit for being the first country to notice that torture is wrong. But Roth, the Jew, doesn't care about the American law, but he does quote the international law, and that's very good of him, don't you think? Let's give him a little bit of applause. Good, Roth. Good. Okay, he says, the prohibition on torture is one of the basic absolute prohibitions that exists in international law. It exists in times of peace as well as in time of war. It exists regardless of the severity of the security threat, and the only other comparable prohibition that I can think of is the prohibition on attacking innocent civilians in time of war or through terrorism. If you're going to have a torture warrant, why not create a terrorism warrant? Why not go in and allow terrorists to come forward and make their case for why terrorism should be allowed? Now, Roth seems to have some idea here that the terrorists should be allowed to explain what their problem is. For example, the Palestinians would like very much to have news coverage over the fact that 700,000 of them were driven off by the Jews on the Israeli side of the partition plan in direct violation of the agreement that went with the partition plan, after which the Jews went and stole the Palestine part of the partition plan. And that's why they're terrorizing them with bombs, because these Jews are literally burglarizing their homes and they have no alternative but to take the gun from the wall and shoot the burglar. And they would love to be able to say that, but nobody will let them. So Roth is saying, if you're going to have a torture warrant, why not create a terrorism warrant? Why not go in and allow terrorists to come forward and make their case for why their terrorism should be allowed? Now, Dershowitz says, well, in fact, we've done that, of course. We've done that. We have bombed civilian targets during every... See, he doesn't even know what the guy's talking about. Did you notice? He doesn't even know what the guy's talking about. He says, we've done that. Of course, we've done that. We have bombed civilian targets during every single one of our wars. We did it in Dresden. I mean, was the guy talking about bombing anybody? No. That's what Dershowitz heard. He didn't hear anything about this humane idea of letting terrorists, you know, talk about their problems with Israel. Not Dershowitz. He just covers it right up. And we did it in Dresden. We did it in Vietnam, notwithstanding these rules. So, you know, having laws on the books and breaking them systematically just creates disdain. It's much better to have rules that we can actually live within. And absolute prohibitions generally are not the kind of rules that countries would live within. You know, so we can't have an absolute prohibition against torture. Now, can we, Dershowitz? I mean, dishwater wits. Okay, then Dershowitz goes on, I want to ask you a question. Don't you think if we ever had a ticking bomb case, regardless of your views or mine, that the CIA would actually either torture themselves or subcontract the job to Jordan, the Philippines, or Egypt, who are our favorite countries to do the torturing for us? Roth, okay, there is no moral or legal difference between torturing yourself and subcontracting torture to somebody else. They're equally, absolutely prohibited! See, so Roth just smacks Dershowitz right in the face. Dershowitz was trying to get Roth to agree that torture's okay, and he turned it right around. He said, it's not okay. It's never okay. Even subcontracting it isn't okay. And then Dershowitz, and here's, you see the little Jewish thing coming out. Dershowitz, but we do it. You know, so therefore it's okay because we do it, so I got you now. We're going to torture people. See how the little Jew comes out? But we do it. You know, I mean, you can almost see his little hands making the little feely gestures that says, we're about to do a deal. And then Roth says, in the case, the fact that sometimes laws are violated, he comes right out. I don't know who Roth is. He's talking like a white guy, but he's obviously Jewish with a name like Roth. But anyway, he says, he's pointing out to Dershowitz, just because we do it doesn't make it right, Dershowitz. You know, bad, bad boy. You know, get your little fingers back and put them down. We're not going to torture anybody just now. After Dershowitz says, but we do it, Roth says, in the case, the fact that sometimes laws are violated does not mean you want to start legitimizing the violation by getting some judge to authorize it. Imagine you're always thinking about the U.S. Supreme Court, but any rule you apply to the United States has to be applied around the world. Do you want Chinese judges authorizing torture of, say, Muslim dissidents? So Roth is saying, yeah, we might do it, but that doesn't make it right, and we shouldn't do it. Then Dershowitz says, it wouldn't make any difference. They just torture anyway. It wouldn't make any difference. They torture now. He's just fighting for that torture issue, boy. You know, he's got to get that in. And this goes back to, I mean, you know what they did to Jesus Christ. These guys love torture. Okay, here comes Roth. Once you open the door to torture, once you start legitimizing it in any way, you have broken the absolute taboo. President Bush had it right in his State of the Union address when he was describing various forms of torture by Saddam Hussein, and he said, if this isn't evil, then evil has no meaning. Then Blitzer comes in, the moderator, and he says, well, let me interrupt you, Ken. Let me ask you about a hypothetical case. Professor Dershowitz talks about, in one of his articles and one of his books, there's a terrorist attack. A lot of people have just been killed in New York. They capture one of the terrorists who says, guess what? There's another bomb out there. It's going to kill a lot more, but I'm not going to tell you where it is. So apparently Dershowitz has even written a book justifying torture, which, you know, I mean, that proves that I was telling you the truth when I said this guy, this Harvard professor, this Jew, is promoting torture, and he's an American. Okay, so that's, then Roth says, ticking bomb, okay, so what? And Dershowitz says, I think we're much better off admitting what we're doing or not doing it at all. Anyway, as far as I'm concerned, he has defeated, in fact, there's no more words by Blitzer. Dershowitz. So I guess he did defeat Dershowitz in that argument, thank God. But there you go. You know, Dershowitz says torture could be justified. I say Dershowitz is a pig, you know, and so are those guys that wrote the torture manual, Malleus Maleficarum, and when the Jews say they've been here since the beginning of America's history, they're right, and we need to get rid of them. They're lousy, stinking, torturing, bastard, creep, animal, beasts. Well, I don't know if Cotton Mather was a Jew. He sounds like he isn't. Most of the places I get reference to him, but it does say here that Cotton Mather, among the most erudite men in Puritan New England, urged that Hebrew be adopted as the official language of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. Hebrew should be the official language of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, says Cotton Mather, the guy who acts more like a Jew than anyone in American history that I've run into so far. The guy that seemed to take such gleeful delight in journaling all that stuff about the witchcraft and the witchcraft trials. Remember, he wrote those two books about the witchcraft trials as a disinterested observer. I mean, how Jewish does it get? So here he wants to adopt Hebrew as the official language of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. I'm telling you, I'm learning how to spot Jews by conduct now. Okay, so maybe he has big, strong ties to the Jewish community. Maybe he's Jewish himself. He is urging that this is be about 1675, he was urging that Hebrew be adopted as the official language of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. I mean, it's unbelievable. Massachusetts is lily white. Why would he want Hebrew to be the national language, the official language of the Massachusetts Bay Colony? Unless he's a Jew.
JFK was trying to get out from under the Federal Reserve System, which is run by Jewish international bankers. And guess who else did that just before he was basically hit by the international community Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler pulled out of the Rothschild-controlled Federal Reserve System, or bank, I think it was called World Banking System, which at that time was run on the gold standard, and Hitler said, we don't need you. We don't need your interest rates. We can survive without you. And Germany's economy skyrocketed as soon as Hitler got them out from under the thumb of the international bankers because of the interest rates. You don't mess with the international banking system and live. And then, of course, Hitler was demonized, which the international media community is so good at doing, revving everybody up and frothing them up with bloodlust and making them run out and catch the rabbit. First it's JFK, first it's Hitler. It's never been JFK, but first it's Hitler, then it's Saddam Hussein, then it's Bin Laden. It's whoever your government wants you to spill blood to kill, and it has nothing to do with your interests. It has to do with the interests of the powers that be, probably the international community, which is run by Jews. Guess what else JFK had done 4 months before he was assassinated? He wrote a strong letter to the new Prime Minister of Israel and said he was coming in and taking those weapons that they had illegally built with our money. Then he ends up assassinated in a three-way shoot. I think it was a three-way shoot. There were three gunmen, in my opinion. And it was obviously covered up by the government, which is what's the most important thing of all to Americans, is who has the power and the motive to cover up major crimes like the assassination of a president, major crimes like the hit on 9/11, which also went uninvestigated, major crimes like the hit against the Waco Davidians, which also went uninvestigated and it was not dealt with. Ramsey Clark was who used to be the Attorney General when JFK was president, represented the Davidians, and all of his work was sealed, and the judges just turned down all of his motions. He didn't get any rights to appeal, just like the Nuremberg trials, another great big cover-up. The question we have to ask ourselves is, who is running the country? Because we have a right to know. We have that right. So what happened after 9/11? Bush appointed this Jew, Michael Chertoff, to be head of Homeland Security, and the first thing he did was locate three major Israeli spy rings and send them back to Israel where they'd be safe. And then he started arresting all of the white dissidents who were loudly proclaiming that Israel is running our country and that Israel is going to get us into a major war, which, of course, is what Israel is doing. So I think that we have a shadow government. I think we are run by international Jews. I think we have to shake off the shackles of our Jewish masters. But it doesn't matter too much what I think, as long as I persuade my fellow Americans that they have to think, and that it's not acceptable to sit around and be run by a government you don't even know the face of. That's simply not American. Well, maybe the internet hasn't made us into millionaires, but it has certainly benefited me personally in terms of giving me some work to do with my mind instead of letting my brain just go completely unexercised. I think the internet is absolutely wonderful. I think it's a great gift to humanity, and I think we're going to find a lot of truth that's been hidden to us by the government and by the people who control the media, because apparently they cannot control this internet. I've heard it has some kind of self-healing quality, so that when you try to tear it apart, it heals itself and it stays strong, and it allows people to communicate and communicate without interference, which is really an evolutionary step forward. The next thing we can look forward to in terms of evolutionary progress is this new technology where they take the sperm and the egg and they do something to it to get 100 little tiny zygotes, and then they run them through computer scans and they can tell the potential parents which one or two or three of these 100 zygotes has the most potential. The parents choose the one that they like the best, the prettiest and the smartest, and they're predicting that within one generation, whichever race or group of people control this technology will rule the world because it will raise the IQ level 30 points. Now, I just think the idea of raising the IQ level 30 points in a generation is wonderful. And I think the Internet was a step toward that, because it was through the Internet that we were able to share our ideas and locate these obscure little scientists who are doing these marvelous breakthroughs and get this technology on the road. Well, look at the regulations that the Jews have placed on the selling of Nazi regalia. It's really a funny story in an attempt to stifle information and the absolute uselessness of trying to stifle information on the Internet. There are 7 countries in Europe, Canada, and Australia where you're not allowed to question whether or not there were gas chambers or say anything bad about Jews. You actually go to jail in Germany for 5 years if you question whether or not there were gas chambers. So naturally, we're questioning the question of the gas chambers hot and heavy, and guess what we're finding out? There were no gas chambers. My point is that the Internet is so powerful and so self-healing that the more you try to pull it out by its roots, the stronger it becomes. Now, there was this lawsuit. I think France sued Yahoo for selling Nazi regalia on the Yahoo auctions. So now Yahoo does not sell Nazi regalia on the Yahoo auctions. But it's so amusing to see how everybody gets around this rule. It's really, really great. For example, one auctioneer, one kid, I don't know, probably an American, was selling this February 1937 issue of the National Geographic, which had 33 full-color pictures of Nazi Germany and 30-some black-and-white pictures. In other words, the whole National Geographic issue was dedicated to extolling the virtues of Hitler's Nazi Germany and how wonderful it was and how beautiful it was and how they were prospering. And they were not allowed to sell this on the Yahoo auction because it extolled the virtues of Nazi Germany, and that's against international law, since France has decided that if it's against the law in France, therefore it has to be against the law in America. So you can just imagine how much Americans are fighting this, because we're not going to let them destroy our free speech. So the way it's being fought is the guy who was auctioning it off said, "This is not against the laws against pro-Nazi, because this is an example of how this vicious, hideous traitor, the writer, so-and-so, I think his name's something like George Chandler, who actually went to jail for treason for writing this horrible, treasonous article. It's a must for anybody, any loyal American who hates Nazi Germany. You must buy it." And of course, the thing sold for well over $100. Yeah, it wasn't that the Germans were using the Jews as scapegoats because they were ugly little greasy kids and they just didn't like their manners. That wasn't why the Germans hated the Jews. The Germans hated the Jews because the Jews were communists. And in communist Russia, they had just seen 65 million white Christians murdered at the hands of these barbaric Khazar Jews that came up from the southeast of Russia and assisted in the overthrow and assassination of the Russian Tsar. It was a hideous, bloodthirsty revolution, the history of which has been pretty much kept from the American public. Most Americans think that the Tsar was bad and the Russian people themselves rose up against this oppressive Tsar and assassinated him, and then there was basically a bloodless coup. Nothing could be farther from the truth. It was by far the bloodiest revolution we've ever had in the world. 65 million Russian people were murdered in order to bring the Russians under the domination of the Jewish Bolsheviks. That's almost twice as many as China, communist China, had to kill in order to institute their communist regime. And Hitler looked at that, and he was a Catholic, and he said, by God, this is the Antichrist I'm looking at. They're against the church. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in the nuclear family, and they're not going to mess with Germany. So the Jews went running around trying to defeat Hitler because they were communists, and he was an anti-communist. They destroyed his rallies. They caused him trouble, and so he did the right thing. He put them in concentration camps, just like Americans put the Japanese in concentration camps. There were no gas chambers. He did not have any plan to exterminate them, and 6 million did not die. The Nuremberg trials were communist show trials. Confessions were extracted through torture, and the winners of the Second World War wrote the history. And they lied about it. There are no boundaries that can stop the flow of truth. There's no special corner of any secret room where truth tellers have to congregate and whisper only to each other. This is America. And even if it wasn't, my right to free speech is God-given, not given to me by any country or any constitution. It's God that put a heart in my body full of feelings and a brain in my head with the ability to figure out what's going on around me and a mouth that can speak and talk. And it's God's will that I speak the truth to the best of my ability. Nothing can stop that. If anything could stop the free flow of information and the truth, that would be the assassination of God himself, and that's never going to happen. The KKK is interesting because it's the one social group that has steadfastly stood against communism since its inception in, I think, the 1800s or earlier. And while there are many things about the KKK that, of course, we don't like, that's one thing that we do like. We do like the fact that there's a social group that has kept the light of anti-communism glowing strongly. And so for that reason, I really do respect the KKK, because they did not capitulate to the 60s inundation of drugs and homosexuality and illegitimacy, which were promoted by the communists and have practically destroyed our country, what with opening the borders and all and allowing almost 1 million illegal aliens coming in to overburden our medical and social services, bring down the intellectual level of our students, and basically destroy our country. It was the KKK that saw it coming and that stood up against it at its worst and are now garnering the laurels for having been intelligent enough and foresighted enough to see what was really threatening us in what was then the future and is now the present. The violence that you hear about when the KKK comes out and has their rallies, if you study the history, you'll be very, very surprised to find that the people who come out against the KKK are card-carrying communists. Honest to God, real-life communists with sensible shoes and no makeup and short hairstyles on the women and beards and dope with the guys. Real, honest-to-God communists come out and rabble-rouse against the KKK. And frankly, I'd much rather be with the well-dressed, wealthy, organized KKK members than the communists, if that was my choice. But it's not my choice, and I don't belong to either group. Nevertheless, I think it's important when you make fun of the KKK that you realize you're making fun of the one group in our history as Americans that has steadfastly stood up against communism. And communism is truly despicable. As I said, the death count in a communist takeover is absolutely overwhelming. 65 million white Christians were murdered by Bolshevik Jews during the Russian Communist Revolution. That fact is not going to go away, no matter how much you try to ignore it. Well, that's it for tonight, folks. Thanks a lot for listening to The Holocaust. See you next week, same time, same station.